Hello, and welcome to episode 18 of Oops All Dex. I am Alex, as always, and I'm here to talk to you about Magic the Gathering. And we've got all kinds of stuff to talk about. Lots of stuff. I've got a deck I'm going to go over, and then we're going to talk about a little thing called Fate Reforged. They've recently come out with a lot of stuff with it. They've released all the mechanics, and a bunch of cards have been spoiled. So, I'm going to go over as much of that as I can. But first and foremost, we're going to go over a deck. This week, we're going to go over a... It's what many would call an oldie but goodie. And it's really not even all that old, but it was more popular a while ago than it is now because it was kind of taken out of the format by a certain mechanic, Miracle. But it's still out there, and occasionally it will actually top 8. So I figure, hey, you know what? Why not? Why don't I talk about it? So this week's deck is Legacy Maverick. Yes, Maverick. As I said, it's a classic, I guess. Okay, you know, what do you define as a classic? It's got a lot of cards that have been around for a little while, but not like forever. Maverick, first I'll kind of just give you like a basic idea of what it does. It's got a lot of cards in it, a lot of different cards. It's not one of those decks where it's like just four of, and then 22 land and it's done. It's a lot of one ofs and a lot of like two ofs and three ofs and then a few four ofs. The deck is basically circled around, let's see here, Mother of Runes, and I'd say the three cards that are most found in this deck, well, actually four cards that are most found in this deck with the most copies would be Mother of Runes, Knight of the Reliquary, Green Sun Zenith, and I'd say Stoneforge Mystic. Those are probably the most common cards. But the idea of this deck, it is the one that I'm looking at is a white-red-green deck. So it's actually called Punishing Maverick because it has Punishing Fires in the main board. But it's Maverick, okay? But the idea is to play Mana Dorks so that you can afford to sack lands to Knight of the Reliquary so that you can afford to just totally annihilate your opponent. Or actually, I shouldn't say sack lands to Knight of the Reliquary. Where is it? One second. Yeah, okay, yeah, that's right, I was right. Knight of the Reliquary, yeah. He's the one that wants lands in your graveyard. So as I'm sure you've assumed, there are a lot of fetches in this deck, so that he can be boosted. But I'm just going to read those cards, and then we'll keep going here. So, let's see here. Basically, the idea is that you protect creatures that you want protected, and you just slowly ping away at life. If you have to, you can just, you know, attack a bunch of times over the course of a few turns while your opponent sits there and isn't really able to do much about it because their deck has been either shut down or they just don't have an answer. So Knight of the Reliquary is a pretty important card in this deck. It costs one, a green and white. It's a 2/2 human knight. It's a 4 of, and it says Knight of the Reliquary gets +1/+1 for each land card in your graveyard. And he has an ability that says you can tap him, sacrifice a forest or a plains, search your library for a land card, put it into play, then shuffle your library. So there's only one forest and one plains in this whole deck. So he's not really the sack engine. He's just those are just kind of there so that you can do it. Most of what the lands that are going to be in your graveyard are going to be are fetch lands. So you've got like Windswept Heath, that's a 4 of, and that's the green-white fetch. You've got Arid Mesa, that's a 3 of in this deck, that's the red-white fetch. And those are the two big ones, so that's 7 of them. And really, you don't even need that many lands in your graveyard for this guy to be good. Because he's already a 2/2. So even if you only have two lands in your grave, he's a 4/4. And chances are your Mother of Runes, who many affectionately refer to as Mom, protects it. Mother of Runes costs one white. I think this card's in another deck that I've done before, but I digress. It's a one cost cleric 1/1 that says tap Mother of Runes. Target creature you control gains protection from a color of your choice until end of turn. So, you know, if you have a Knight of Reliquary out and you have a Mother of Runes out at the same time, chances are nothing's going to happen to your board unless they were countered. And the thing is here, too, this deck is it's a really hard deck to counter because there's so much that it can do. So when you're playing a deck that's running Force of Will or, you know, whatever counter they might play, it's tough for them to gauge what to counter because there really is a lot that they can counter. Mother of Runes is a big one. Knight of the Reliquary is a big one. There's lots of equipments. Stoneforge Mystics, you know, Green Sun Zeniths. It's tough to decide what to counter. And so if they don't counter the right thing, it could really screw them, basically, especially if they don't have it early. So, you know, there's another issue. So let's see here. I'm gonna go down the line here, and just kind of read off what these cards are in here. Let's see. Okay, so like I said, there's a lot of mana dorks in this deck. I'll just read off all the mana dorks. So we've got one copy of Birds of Paradise in this deck. We have one copy of Noble Hierarch in this deck. Or no, sorry, three copies of Noble Hierarch. And we've got one Dryad Arbor, and, okay, well, this particular one doesn't have a whole lot now, does it? Interesting. So, Bird of Paradise, of course, being the 0/1 flyer that adds any color of mana to your mana pool for one green. Noble Hierarch, also costing one green. It can add a green, white, or a blue to your mana pool. It's a 0/1, but it has Exalted, which Exalted being a depending on, say you have two creatures out that have Exalted, if one creature attacks, they get +2/+2. For each instance of Exalted on the battlefield, they get a +1/+1, but that's only if they attack alone. So, you know, you've got a couple of Exalted in here, because you also have Kasali Pride Mage, costs a green and a white. There's a Cat Wizard 2/2 with Exalted, so there's another one, that's a 2 of in this deck. It also has an ability that you can pay one colorless to sack him, and destroy target artifact or enchantment. So I guess if you absolutely have to, you can do that. The Exalted part is probably the more important aspect of that card, but it's also a bit of a Swiss Army knife there. Here, anything else with Exalted? Well, I mean, because legitimately, even if you don't have Knight of Reliquary out, if you have a Noble Hierarch out, which you put out on turn 1, and then a Kasali Pride Mage on turn 2, and then you happen to top deck a Bird of Paradise or something, there, you have a 2/3 now with flying. That can also tap for any color mana. A 2/3 with flying is, I mean, it's a Delver, you know, and it's, while it can be destroyed, it's also destroyed. So, say you have a Bird of Paradise out that is a 2/3, and it's just attacked, for a turn now, for 2. And then you attack again for 2. On their turn, they go, you know what, I'm tired of this bird, I'm gonna kill it. So they do. Okay, good job. Well, now I cast, Stoneforge Mystic. You know, so basically it's a draw. It's a good draw for a destroy spell so that, I mean, you still have something else that you can replace it with. It's not like Delver where it's like, oh no, my Delver's dead. Whatever am I going to do? Which I know Delver isn't like that because you have plenty of other answers, but, so let's see here. What else do we have? We also have, you know what, I'm going to read Stoneforge Mystic because there's three of this in the deck. It costs one and a white. It's a 1/2 core artificer. And it says, when Stoneforge Mystic enters the battlefield, it may search for a library for an equipment card. Reveal it. Put it in your hand, then shuffle your library. And there are plenty of equipment cards in this deck. I'll read them next. Costs one and a white, you may tap it. You could pay one and a white and tap it, and it says you may put an equipment card from your hand on the battlefield. So if it costs a lot, it's worth to do it. Which, we have a Batterskull, we have Umezawa's Jitte, and we have a Sword of Fire Knife. So three Stoneforge Mystics and three equipments to use with it. And Batterskull, of course, being the 5-cost living weapon that says equipped creature gets 4/4 and has vigilance and lifelink, and you can pay 3 to return Batterskull to its owner's hand, and you can equip it for 5. Living weapon, of course, being the ability where this equipment hits the battlefield and basically a 0/0 creature is created and immediately has Batterskull attached to it. So basically for 5, you have a 4/4 with Vigilance and Lifelink. Now, if that creature dies, of course, you can still re-equip it to anything else, or you can do that right off the bat when you cast it, but most people just cast Batterskull for its ability, for its living weapon, because a 4/4 with Vigilance and Lifelink for 5 is pretty good. And you can return it to your hand and recast it if you want. Of course,
you can recast it with Stoneforge Mystic for two. So, again, that's why it's so good with this card. And then Sword of Fire and Ice is another fun one. It costs three, and its equipped creature gets 2/2 and has protection from red and blue. Whenever equipped creature deals combat damage to a player, Sword of Fire and Ice deals 2 damage to target creature or player, and you may draw a card. And its equipped cost is 2. So again, it's a utility card, and again, especially against blue, which is probably this deck's bane of existence. It's a good card to have. Umizawa's Jitte costs 2 colorless. It's a legendary artifact, equipment, blah, blah, blah. Whenever a equipped creature deals damage, combat damage, put 2 charge counters on it, or on the Jitte. And you may remove a charge counter from the Jitte, and then choose one of the following. Equipped creature gets 2/2 until end of turn, or target creature gets -1/-1 until end of turn, or you gain 2 life. So again, it's just very utilitarian. Cost 2 to equip it as well.
And legitimately, those 3 artifacts are probably, or those 3 equipments, rather, are probably some of the best equipments that you can have. This is Legacy, so that's what you need to do. You need to have all the best. So again, you know, Mother of Runes comes heavily into play here, because if you have a Mother of Runes and you cast a Stoneforge Mystic and you get one of those equipments in your hand and you cast it and you attach it to, say, a Knight of Reliquary, you're going to want something to protect it in case it needs to be protected. And she does that very well for 1 white, so hard to complain. Let's see, what else do we got here? Okay, so we also have Gaddock Teague. This is a cool creature. It costs a green and a white. It's a legendary creature, Kithkin Advisor, and it's a 2/2. Notice most of the creatures in this deck, besides like Noble Hierarch and Bird Paradise, are like 2/2s. Or at least have a 2 toughness. So they're out of range of all those little 1 damage pingers. Or all those wipers, like board wipes. Which is good, because there's a lot of those out there. The problem, though, with this deck is it's a lot of creatures, and it's creature-based. So when you got a deck like Miracle, which I mentioned earlier, with Terminus, it just puts all of your creatures on the bottom of your library, and you basically have lost the game, because this deck doesn't really have too much of a draw engine. It's basically just like, hey, every card that you draw is probably a good one, but if you lose all of them and in 1 card, you're probably done. See, of course, the same could be said for a lot of other decks. That's why Miracles are so good. But anyways, this creature, it says, non-creature spells with converted mana cost 4 or greater can't be played. And it also says non-creature spells with X in their mana cost can be played. So this card was probably more popular before, when Terminus wasn't a card. Because what this thing basically says is, hey, no Wrath of Gods. No board wipes. Very hard to destroy everything. So there really wasn't an answer for this deck until Terminus. I mean, there were, but Terminus is the best one. So there's that. What else do we have here? Oh yeah, Punishing Fire. Duh. Punishing Fire is a great card for this deck. It was a good card in Jund. It's a good card now. Punishing Fire is just one of those ones where it just you ping, and you keep getting it back, it costs 1 and a red. It's an instant. And it says, Punishing Fire deals 2 damage to target creature or player. And it says, whenever an opponent gains life, you may pay 1 red. If you do, return Punishing Fire from your graveyard to your hand. So it's a good way to keep them honest. You know, all those little cards that say, hey, play me and gain 1 life. Or tap me and gain 1 life. And do something else. This is a good way to keep that balance. Because without this, you know, all those little pain attacks that you did with your Knight of Reliquary before he was removed are for naught. Punishing Fire keeps that honest. You know, so if they go ahead and gain all that life back, you at least have something to kind of keep it there. Because if it's just 1 life they're gaining, they're not really helping themselves, because they're actually taking another one shortly thereafter. So that's a good card to run in this deck, in my opinion. I if I was running Maverick, I would definitely run that. If not a 3 of, at least a 2 of. And Scavenging Ooze is another great card for this deck. It costs 1 and a green. Creature Ooze, it's a 2/2. See, it's another 2/2. And it has an ability that says, pay 1 green. Exile target card from a graveyard. If it was a creature card, put a +1/+1 counter on Scavenging Ooze, and you gain 1 life. Use Punishing Fire to destroy some of their creatures. You can exile them. And then this guy gets a bonus. Or if somebody killed all your dudes, hey, you know what? You have something at least you can hit with. Because there's not a lot in this deck that returns creatures. So again, just taking advantage of, hey, you know what? You did kill a couple of my dudes. That's fine because I have a scavenging ooze and I can at least take some advantage of that. Gain a couple life and maybe have a, you know, a 4/4. There's a lot of cards in this deck. That's why I had to really read up on this before I even started, because it's just like, whoa, why are there so many cards?
But, you know, they all make sense. We've got another one, and it's a one-of. It's called Voice of Resurgence, arguably the only good card from Dragon's Maze. It costs green and a white, again. A lot of cheap cards in this deck. It's a 2/2, and it's an elemental mythic rare that says, whenever an opponent casts a spell during your turn, or when Voice of Resurgence dies, put a green and white elemental creature token onto the battlefield with. This creature's power and toughness are each equal to the number of creatures you control. So, if they counter a spell while you have VOR out, you get one of these. If they try to lightning bolt you or something during your turn, which I don't know why they would, if they saw this guy was on the board, then you get a creature. But most of all, when he dies, you get a creature. And it's just... it's always going to be a 1/1, at least, or a 2/2 if the Voice of Resurgence just didn't die. But it's at least a creature. And it's a good way to keep people from casting crap on your turn. It's a good way to keep people from countering, which already was a difficult decision to make against this deck. Another good one we have in here is Swords to Plowshares. I'm really not reading in any order because this deck is out of order. You're out of order! Swords to Plowshares costs 1 white. It's probably the best removal spell in the game. It costs... yeah, no big deal or anything. It's an instant, and it says, remove target creature from the game, or exile target creature. That creature's controller gains life equal to its power. So if you don't like what they have out, it's gone now. It's just gone, you know. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. It's gone forever. You can't have it back. No. Nope, it's gone because I said so. So, for 1 white, it's one of the best removal cards ever.
Especially in white.
Next up, we have Green Sun Zenith. One of the more important cards in here. Green Sun Zenith costs X and a green. It's a sorcery rare that says, search your library for a green creature card with converted mana cost X or less. Put it on the battlefield, then shuffle your library. Shuffle Green Sun Zenith into its owner's library. So basically, for 1 colorless and a green, you get to play your Stoneforge Mystic from your deck. Or, for 2 colorless and a green, you can cast Knight of the Reliquary from your deck. Or for 1 green and a green, you can cast Gedog Teeg. Basically, any creature card that you want from your deck, you can have it.
And the hilarious part is, it's a 4/4. This card's a 4/4. And then it gets put back into your library, so you have even more of a chance to get it. And the nice thing about this deck is it doesn't really manipulate the library except for this card, so you don't have to worry about screwing up your order on the top of the deck. It really is like the perfect card for this, because the deck's already a Swiss Army knife of a deck, so it's like, okay, I want my Stoneforge Mystic now so that I can win. Whoops, I drew a Green Sun Zenith. Okay, I guess I'll cast it and get him, and then also get an equipment, and then pay 1 and a white next turn so that I can play it from my hand for free. You know, no big deal.
And I think I have 1 card left, just the 1. Domri Raid. Yes, Domri Raid. Everyone loves Domri Raid. He costs 1 a red and a green. He's a planeswalker that comes into play with 3 loyalty. And he has a +1 that says, look at the top card of your library. If it's a creature card, you may reveal it and put it into your hand. It also has a -2 here that says, target creature you control fights another target creature. And it has a -7 that says, you get an emblem with, creatures you control have double strike, trample, hexproof, and haste. So basically the perfect card for this deck. That's cool. So, it's a pretty fun deck. That's all the main board cards, at least from this copy. There's a couple other cards that are very, very popularly run, such as Thalia. Thalia is in the sideboard of this deck, but a lot of Maverick mainboards it. Thalia, Garden of Thraben, costs one and a white. It's a legendary creature, human soldier, rare. That is a 2/1. So a rare one toughness creature in this deck. It has first strike and says non-creature spells cost one more to cast. Perfect. If you're playing a counter deck or if you're playing a combo deck, that's why it's in the sideboard. Because then the next game, if you lost through a combo, you can have a Thalia and just throw it out there and be like, hey, enjoy that.
Then there's also, what else is there? You can play a Thrun. If you're playing a counter deck, that's another good one. Thrun the Last Troll costs 2/2 green, legendary creature, troll shaman. He can't be countered, and he can't be the target of spells or abilities your opponents control. So he has hexproof, and he can't be countered, and you can pay 1 and a green to regenerate him, and he is a 4/4. So really hard to get rid of, really hard to avoid, really hard to not die from. So if you're playing a counter deck and you die, or you lose the game, game two, get that Thrun in there. Because if you get him on the board, basically he's there. And there's nothing they can do about it. And they're on a clock. Because they can't counter it. So, reasons. And of course, there's a ton of land. The other important land besides the fetch lands is Wasteland. Wasteland, you can pay, you can tap it to add one colorless to your mana pool, or you can tap and sack it to destroy a target non-basic land. So you can get rid of one of theirs and yours, adding to Reliquary's power. Or you can, if you're insane, destroy your own wasteland, or destroy another one of your lands to pump him. Again, though, I don't know why you would want to do that. I suppose if their life total is really low and you know they have nothing that they can do to avoid it, then sure, that makes sense.
Oh shoot, I missed one. Sylvan Library. How did I miss this? It's kind of important. Sylvan Library is an enchantment. And basically, it's amazing. It costs 1 and a green, and it says, at the beginning of your draw step, you may draw 2 additional cards. If you do, choose 2 cards in your hand drawn this turn. For each of those cards, pay 4 life or put the card on top of your library. So basically, look at the top 2 cards. If you want to keep one or both of them, pay 4 life each. If you don't, put them back. That's, of course, the Oracle text. The printed text is much more confusing. But, yeah, this is a one-of in this particular version of Maverick. And it's good, because then you know what you're doing. The only thing that I would complain about with Sylvan Library is that you can't get rid of them. You know, oh well. Most of the time, if it's something cheap enough or something that you need, which is every card in this deck, you're going to take at least one of them. The other one might be a land or something, so there's no point unless you need it. But, yeah. And then I should mention, too, there's a couple other lands in this deck that sack themselves, such as Horizon Canopy. You can tap it, pay a life to add a green or a white to your pool, or you can tap one colorless, tap and then sacrifice it to draw a card. So again, another one in your graveyard. Perfect for Knight of Reliquary. Yeah, so Maverick is an interesting deck. I'd like to play it sometime. If I had, you know, $1,000 laying around, I would probably build it and play it. But I don't, so there's that. But I would love to play this deck at some point because it looks fun. It's one of those decks where every card you draw is like, yes! You know, unlike a control deck where it's like, alright, I draw another Force of Will. Aww. Yes, Eeyore is piloting a control deck. That's why he's sad about it, because he's sad about a lot of stuff. Poor guy. So yeah, that's Maverick. I don't have too much else to say about it. I figured I'd just go over it, kind of go over what the idea is. The idea is play cheap creatures that have Exalted and can tap for mana. Use them to cast Stoneforge Mystics, Knight of Reliquaries, you know, get some equipments out there and just slam away at them. And then, of course, an occasional Green Sun Zenith that you can use to even further shatter their ability to win the game. And, you know, its matchup is really bad against Miracles, just because Terminus is a card. But
you know, if you can get there quick enough, hey, you know, maybe you won't die. And it's just a good deck. It's just got a lot of good cards in it. It's, you know, the first thing I thought when I looked at it was, wow, somebody just took a bunch of good cards and threw them into a pile and said, okay, this is my deck. And then they went, and then they actually went with it, and they were like, wow, this is awesome. But when you actually look at it, there's a lot of thought that went into this, especially the older variations of it, because there was less that it had to worry about. I should say, especially newer versions, because there's more it has to worry about. So yeah, that's Maverick. That's Maverick Legacy. That's pretty much all I have to say about that. So yeah, I'm going to move on now. We're going to talk about something that I really want to talk about, as well as everything else. We're going to talk about Fate Reforged, because that is a thing, and it's coming. It's coming quickly. So Fate Reforged is the next set coming out in the Khans of Tarkir block. It is extremely awesome so far. Everything that I've seen just tops. I'm really, really, really liking what I'm seeing here. It's got already a bunch of good cards in it, and the mechanics are just freaking cool, okay? So let's see here. Fate Reforged is being released on the 23rd of January. So here we are already. What's today? Today is the 7th of January already. So we're only a few weeks away, really. And from everything I've seen so far, spoiler-wise and just information-wise, this set is going to be it's going to be amazing. Okay, let's just put it that way. The idea is Fate Reforged is a set based 1,000 years in the past before Khans of Tarkir. So the idea is Khans of Tarkir is what they had now, is what the plane was, the plane is right now. And the reason that the plane is the way it is because of an event that happened 1,000 years ago during Fate Reforged. So they take us back in time here, back to when Ugin was still alive. Ugin the Spirit Dragon, of course, the colorless dragon that's amazing. One of the three planeswalkers responsible for sealing the Eldrazi originally. Yeah, I know a little bit about MTG lore. I'm not the most educated person, but I know a little bit. I know at least enough to get me by. But anyway, yeah, so we're going back in the past. And the idea of this set, because of the new way that they're going to be, you know, arranging sets, instead of there being three sets to a block, it's going to be two sets to a block, starting after this block and after MTG 2016, it's going to be all two-set blocks. So they had to do this in a certain way that it would work with the next set standalone by itself. So that's kind of why they did it this way, but it's awesome. So let's just start off with what all the mechanics are in this set. I'll just read them off. We have Bolster, which is a new one. Prowess, which is one, it's an old one. Delve, also old. Dash, new. Ferocious, old. Manifest, new. And then we also have Hybrid Mana. And then we've got Modal, Enter the Battlefield abilities. And we'll go over that in a minute. First, I want to start off with Bolster, which is one of the new mechanics, and it's actually one of the ones that I'm liking most. It's like way better than the other version of this from Khans of Tarkir. What was it called? It was so bad. Crap. Prowess. No, not Prowess. Ugh, God, I'm stupid. Not Prowess. Outlast. That's the one. It's so much better than Outlast. Bolster, I'll just read it off a card. It's on a card here called Honor's Reward. It costs 2 and a white, and it's an instant. And it says, you gain 4 life, bolster 2. Choose a creature. Okay, so this is the reminder text for bolster 2. Choose a creature with the least toughness among creatures you control, and put 2 +1/+1 counters on it. So for 3 mana, you gain 4 life and 2 1/1 counters to something. I mean, like, what? Okay, so if you have big creatures only, so say you have a bunch of creatures that are 3/3s, they still get it. You can still put 1/1 counters. It just says the one with the weakest toughness. And it's one of those ones that's it's always followed by a number, just like Annihilation or Scry, always followed by a number. And I at no point see this being a bad thing, ever.
because it's creatures you control. It's not one of those stupid mechanics where it's like, choose a creature with the least toughness. Well, you have to decide. That's what makes it good. No, it's good because you don't have to decide. It decides for you, but it decides in a good way. Because why would you play a 1-1 creature in your deck unless you need to have it in your deck? So what's better than boosting an important 1-1 creature? There's nothing more important than that.
Or a few things more important than that. And the thing is, it's not just giving them more toughness, it's giving them more attack too. So imagine this on a Bird of Paradise. Whoops, now I have a 2/3 Bird of Paradise for 3 mana. And that's, of course, this card is not necessarily good, but Bolster is good. Bolster is very good. Just very good. I like it. Prowess is returning, of course. Prowess being the thing where creatures have it that says whenever you cast a non-creature spell, this creature gets +1/+1 till end of turn. So imagine Prowess with Bolster. Whoops, I boost one of my smaller guys with Bolster, and all my Prowess dudes also get boosted.
Herp-a-derp. And then Delve is back. Delve being each card you exile from your graveyard while casting the spell pays for one colorless of this card. I was stupid when I reviewed Gods of Tarkir and said, I don't like Delve. I love Delve in the right situation, which the right situation involves limited, constructed. It's good in a deck that casts a lot of instant sorcery spells. It's good in a deck that has a lot of stuff in its graveyard that it can afford to get rid of to pay for better stuff. So the only downside is that most stuff with Delve have high mana costs, and when you look at them, they seem bad. But really, Delve is one of those mechanics where once you use it, once you do it, you go, whoa, this is how this works. Okay, that's cool. So yeah, Delve is back as well, which a lot of people are happy about. Next up is Dash. Yes, Dash. It's on a new card here called Goblin Heel Cutter.
And Dash is... let me just reread. Oh, that's right. Okay. So basically what Dash does is it makes it an instant sorcery creature. Let me explain. We have Goblin Heel Cutter, costs 3 and a red, and it's a 3/2. It's a Goblin Berserker that says, whenever Goblin Heel Cutter attacks, target creature can't block this turn. Okay? You know.
Sounds okay. It's like, whatever. Basically just limited. It's probably still just limited even with Dash, but now it has Dash, and its Dash cost is different than its regular casting cost. Doesn't have to be. It's not necessarily going to be different every time, but on this card it is. So Dash, 2 and a red, so you can pay 2 and a red, and it says you may cast this spell for its Dash cost. If you do, it gains haste, and it's returned from the battlefield to its owner's hand at the beginning of the next end step. Next end step, so that's yours. Most of the time. All the time. So it's just like Archwing Dragon. You know, it costed 2/2 red and it was a flying dragon, but at the end of the turn, it was always returned to your hand. Just like that. So they're evasive, and they also basically give you a creature that is attacking that can deal damage, and most of them have an ability. Like, target creature can't block this turn. So Dash is interesting. I like it. I do like it much because it provides card advantage. When I cast this guy for Dash, I get him back. I can recast it next turn if I want, or I can cast him fully for a creature. And then we also have Ferocious back. Ferocious being, you know, basically as long as you have a creature with power 4 or greater, it gets an ability or something happens. So Ferocious is nice because most creatures are, well, not most. I shouldn't say most, but a lot of creatures are big, a lot of fatties, so it's a good thing to have. Manifest is the next one, and this is the one that's probably the best mechanic ever. Manifest is basically a archaic version of Morph. Actually, a less confusing version of Morph. Maybe a more confusing version of Morph. Who knows? So, there's a card here called Soul Summons. It costs 1 and a white, and it's a sorcery, and it's basically the best way to describe how Manifest works. Here's what the card says.
Manifest the top card of your library.
Reminder text. Put it into the battlefield face down as a 2/2 creature.
What?
Turn it face up any time for its mana cost if it's a creature card.
What?
So if it's a creature card, you can put it face down.
or you can put it face up at any time if you pay its mana.
Cost.
So it's good, but it's also kind of scary, because if you do it and you don't know what's on the top of your deck, you know, it could be a land. It could be something you need. But at the same time, hey, it could be a land. It could be something you don't need. You know, so you get a 2-2 creature out of it instead of not getting a 2-2 creature out of it. We have another card that does the exact same thing, but it's a little bit better. Ethereal Ambush costs 3, a green and a blue. It's an instant, and it says manifest the top 2 cards of your library. So again, it's basically morphing it. And it's a face-down card, but it doesn't have a morph cost to flip it up. It's always going to be whatever the mana cost is of the card. And again, as long as it's a creature card, you can flip it back up for its cost. However, if it's a land, an instant, a sorcery, an artifact that isn't a creature, you can't. It's always going to be a 2-2. That's manifest. Here's another one that has manifest, too. Rage Form. Costs 2 and 2 red. It's an enchantment. And it says, when Rage Form enters the battlefield, it becomes an aura with enchant creature. Manifest the top card of your library and attach Rage Form to it. What? Oh, I missed the bottom part. There's a lot of I'm like, that's the whole card? Why would you want to do that? but I read a little farther. I was reading the reminder text and I thought that was the end of the card. And then it also gives the enchanted creature now has double strike. So yeah. Now, what I'm wondering is, so what if I flip the creature back up? Rage Form would stay on it, wouldn't it? I don't see why not. It doesn't change places. Yeah, it would stay on it. I'm pretty sure. If I'm wrong, let me know. But I'm pretty sure it would stay right on it. Interesting. Okay, so that's manifest. And then one more, and then I'll go back and talk about that a little bit more. Modal enter the battlefield abilities. Basically what that is it's because we have two sets that we need to work with here. You know, being that Fate Reforged has to work with Khans of Tarkir and with Dragons of Tarkir, but those two sets don't necessarily work with each other. It has to have cards that kind of does two things. So here's an example. Hooded Assassin costs 2 and a black. It's a creature assassin that is a 1-2. And it says, when Hooded Assassin enters the battlefield, choose one. You may put a 1-1 counter on Hooded Assassin, or destroy target creature that was dealt damage this turn. So, you know, feel free to speculate which one is better for Dragons of Tarkir. Probably the second one. But basically, any card in the set that has these modals where you can choose, it has to do with the two sets. You know, one of them being in the future, one of them being in the past. One of them being a alternate future. They're both alternate futures. So basically, they work with either one. So that's what we're kind of looking at here. So, if I had to pick right now what my favorite mechanic is, oh my goodness. You know, honestly, it'd probably be Bolster. Just because it's amazing. Especially if it's gonna be on creatures or instants and sorceries that do other stuff. What I'm worried about is that this card, this mechanic is gonna be completely ignored for this reason. It's gonna be on cards that suck. Or it's going to be on cards that cost too much because they do something that you could normally do anyways, but whoop-de-doo, they bolster too. But here's the thing. In the right deck, bolster is amazing. Bolster is great. Bolster completely changes the outcome of a game. I mean, imagine putting an extra 2-1-1 counters on something. Because, especially in a deck that where creatures matter, it's a huge deal. Dash, I could see it being good too. Dash, I see me liking about 2 or 3 cards with Dash on it. Which, you know, I don't know how many cards are going to have Dash, so I guess, you know, whatever. But I see me liking a few of them, and the rest of them me being just like, meh, you know? Of course, in Limited, I think Dash is going to be amazing because, you know, you only have, well, I mean, most of the time, you're going to have about 40 cards. The cards with Dash, you're legitimately able to cast more than once, and that's good. You want to have something that you can get a lot of use out of in a deck that only has 40 cards. You know, you want it to work towards what you're doing, but you know, you still want to do it. Manifest is a card that is an ability that I'm just not sure about at this point, because, like I said, it's perfect if you know what's on top of your deck and you don't want it. But if there's something on top of your deck that you want, you know, don't play this in any deck, any control decks, basically. Play this in
What it's doing is it's drawing cards off of the top of your library, so essentially, and playing them for free. You still have to cast them, but you're basically just putting your hand on the battlefield and giving it a 2/2. You know, giving it a power toughness of 2/2. So you can still cast it if it's a creature, but it can still die. So you gotta be careful, you know. If they're playing a control deck and you have a bunch of 2/2 manifests on the battlefield, you're probably gonna be okay, because there's not a lot of things they can do about it. They can return it to your hand, which is like, okay, I'll just cast it then, like normal. Or they can give it like -1/-1, or -2/-2 and kill it. But again, it's like, okay, well, you know, like, the manifest is one of those ones where I'd have to play it to really know
how good it is. But I feel like it's worth a lot. It's really an interesting mechanic. You know, if you were to point a gun at my head and say, guess some mechanics that are going to be in Fate Reforged, another type of morph ability would have been the absolute last thing I would have thought of. But it makes sense, you know, now that you look at it, because it's like an older version of morph. But some might argue better version of morph. So who knows? But yeah, those are the mechanics of Fate Reforged. They look pretty amazing. It's like they took the best mechanics from Cons of Tarkir and then added a bunch of really good ones. And then took the really crappy ones and got rid of them. But I guess only time will tell, huh? So yeah, those are the mechanics of of Fate Reforged. And they've spoiled a lot of cards too. But what I think I'm going to do is I'm going to wait to talk about them. There's one or two that I'm going to go over, though, just because I can. But I don't want to go over every single freaking card in this set, not right now. What I want to do is just go through color by color and do them. But right now there's only a handful that's spoiled, so I mean, there's a lot that's been spoiled, don't get me wrong. But I don't want to go over every blasted one of them. I just want to go over a couple that I found interesting. And then in the next couple episodes, I'll go over the rest. Because we've got a few weeks yet until the next set comes out, so all kinds of time. So, first off, I gotta go over the Planeswalker that's been revealed. Ugin. That's right. Ugin has a Planeswalker card, which is what I predicted would happen. I'm sure what a lot of people predicted would happen. It's a Planeswalker card. It doesn't necessarily make me smile because it's good, but it's another Planeswalker. Ugin the Spirit Dragon. Costs 8 colorless mana. Yes, 8. He comes in with 7 loyalty. Yes, 7 loyalty. So, wow. Costs a lot of loyalty. He has a +2 that says, Ugin the Spirit Dragon deals 3 damage to target creature or player, so Ghost Flame. He has a -X that says, exile each permanent with converted mana cost X or less that's 1 or more colors. So he can't exile colorless stuff, basically. So if you cast this and you do a -7, it's going to get rid of everything that has a colored mana in it, or everything that has a mana in its mana cost. If it's colorless, if it's an artifact, it is unaffected. That is a really good ability. It's a very good board wipe. So it won't destroy lands, and it won't destroy colorless creatures or artifacts. Okay, cool. He also has a -10 that says, you gain 7 life, draw 7 cards, then put up to 7 permanent cards from your hand onto the battlefield. Yeah, so here's the fun thing. Ugin has a +2, right? So if I +2 him the moment he comes out, he's a 9 loyalty planeswalker, and I've dealt 3 damage. If I do it again next turn, he's a loyalty 11. So now I've dealt 6 damage for 8 mana to any amount of to a target creature or player, and when I do his -10 next turn, which is what I'm going to be doing, he's still going to have loyalty left. And I'm still going to have permanents on the battlefield to protect him. So this is actually an amazing card. It costs a lot, but this card is going to be up there in decks like with Karn. He costs a lot, but what he does basically wins you the game. How many times have you drawn 7 cards, gained 7 life, and put 7 cards on the battlefield for free and not won? You couldn't count that many on your hand, because there's not a lot of times that's going to happen. This is one of those cards where it's going to go into a ramp deck and you're basically just going to win, because a ramp deck already has big cards in it, so you get 7 big cards for free. Now, its ability would be stupid if it was the other way around. Like, you gain 7 life, put 7
permanents on the battlefield and then draw 7 cards. Then it would be terrible. I would set every copy of this card on fire. But because it isn't that, it's good.
Costs a lot, but it's good. It's not going to be playable in standard, but it's good. I mean, at least I don't think it is. So, yeah. What else do I want to go over? I only really want to do like one or two more cards. Because again, I want to save these for later. Okay. Here's one that people are already writing off. Temporal Trespass. This card costs 8 colorless and 3 blue mana. Yeah, it's a sorcery mythic rare with Delve. And it says, take an extra turn after this one. Exile Temporal Trespass. So you remember how Treasure Cruise is one of the top played cards from Khans of Tarkir? And it has Delve, and it lets you draw 3 cards. Do you remember the other card in there called Dig Through Time? Do you remember Murderous Cut? So basically, this card's amazing. For 3 blue, you get an extra turn. Now, granted, this is probably a 1 to 2 of, because it costs so much, and it costs you 8 cards out of your graveyard. Let's put it this way. For 3 blue mana, you get another turn. It's one more blue than a Time Walk. And it's also, yes, sure, it's costing you some cards from your graveyard. But, I don't know. I mean, to me, this is an absolute must-run in any commander deck. Especially one that's running cards that lets you tap for any color. And I think it's going to be interesting to see where this card goes. You know, I really don't know if it's going to be good. I don't. But I can tell you right now, it's interesting. Delve, again, is one of those ones where you look at it and go, this is awful. But then you go, but it has Delve. But this is awful. But it has Delve. But this is awful. So you don't know what to think about it. And I'm not going to know what to think about it either until I friggin' see it played. So for now, I'm just going to say this is an interesting card and leave it at that. And that's where I'm going to leave it, I think. Because I don't want to go over anymore. I'm going to wait until more are spoiled, and then I want to go through and just go color by color. You know, go, okay, these are all the white cards. These are all blue cards. These are all the black cards. And just do that way, because that way I can actually go over them and afford enough time for them. So, yeah, that's pretty much all I've got news-wise. I mean, I really just wanted to talk about Fate Reforged. So there's not really much else that I wanted to talk about, so I think we can move on. I think it's time that we move on to, well, our regular business. Episode 17's mashup, I think, is what we should do. Actually, the mashup and the question of the week, or question of the episode, I should say. Episode 17's mashup was between, let's see here, it was Spectral Procession and Primordial Sage. If you don't know what the mashup is, essentially I go to the Gatherer and I hit random card, and then I read the card, I read the Oracle and the printed text if it makes a difference. If it doesn't, then whatever, I don't read it, but and then I read the card, and then what I do is I hit a random card once more, and then I read that card, and then I note them, I write them down, or I favorite the pages, and then what I do is I challenge you to mash them up. And what I mean by mashup is, what would these two cards look like if they were printed on one card? What's a good way to combine them? You know, sometimes you only take, like, you know, 30% of one card and 70% of the other card and make them one. Sometimes it's pretty close. Sometimes it's like half and half. Sometimes you only keep like one or two things from the other card, but it's just really a good way to get the brain rolling on different ways or different cards that there could be printed. There's so many possibilities, and you know, we're always seeing new ones coming out, and it seems like the game is just getting more and more complicated. We've come basically full circle from, you know, them releasing what were they? The Portal, you know, Portal starter kits or whatever, where they just made it so dumb that it actually made it more complicated. And the game is getting more and more complicated, where cards are having more and more card text on them. So, you know, these mashups are cool because it can sometimes take two complicated cards and make them even more complicated. But sometimes you get two boring ones. So last week's, what were they here? I just said them. Spectral Procession and Primordial Sage. So Spectral Procession, I'm going to read it really quickly. It's a sorcery, uncommon, that costed, it's one of those weird hybrid ones where you could either pay 2 colorless or a white. So it's technically converted 6, but You can pay 3 white instead of 6 colorless, or 2 colorless and then 2 white. It's, yeah. But anyways, it's a sorcery that says, put 3 1/1 white spirit creature tokens with flying onto the battlefield. Okay. Primordial Sage is a spirit, rare, 4/5, that costs 4 and 2 green, and it says, whenever you cast a creature spell, you may draw a card. So the way that I took this one, I figured, you know, these two actually work okay together because, you know, the idea is you cast this guy and then you cast the other card. Obviously, there's better token generators than that, but, you know, if you're playing limited, then, you know, you're good to go. And actually, the funny thing is, both of these, I didn't realize this at the time, but both of these were reprinted in Commander 2014 edition. So, obviously, from different decks, but they actually kind of work well together. So what I kind of thought was, let's fuse these cards together. Literally. Let's do a mashup where I actually use a split card and use fuse. Which, if you don't know what fuse is basically, you originally had split cards, which were, I think, from, like, the Apocalypse set. I don't know, I'll have to look that up in a second, but anyways, they came from a while back. They reprinted them, they reused split cards in Return to Ravnica block. I believe it was just in Dragon's Maze and Gatecrash. Right? No, it was in all... You know, I should probably remember this, but for some reason I'm having a hard time right now. But basically, the idea was it was still a split card, but the cards kind of worked together. You could cast one or the other and not worry about the other one, or you could fuse them together. And they had to be cast in a certain order, so they were always ordered in a way that made sense. So this is the same way. This is what I kind of thought of. I put the token generator... No, I put the... Well, I'll just read it to you. Okay, so this is how I have it. I don't have it named, but this is what I've got. The first card on the split card costs 1 and a green, or it's a hybrid 1 colorless or green. Or no, 2 colorless or green, sorry. That makes no sense. And then a green. So you can either cast it for 2 green or 2 and a green, so 3. And it's a sorcery that says, until end of turn, all creatures you control get, whenever you cast a creature, draw a card. Yeah. And actually, in retrospect, that should cost 2 of those hybrids. So that should be, actually, probably 3 of them. Because that's extremely powerful. But again, you know, that's the beauty of the mashup. You can do that. There's no problem with that. You know what, let's say it costs 3 of those 2 green, 2 green. So 2 green, 2 green, 2 green. So it costs 6 or 3, which is still really powerful. But I don't care. And then the second card costs 2 white, 2 white. So I reduced it down. So instead of it being the 2 white, 2 white, 2 white hybrid, I just made it 2. And it's a sorcery that says put 2, 1, 1... flying spirit tokens onto the battlefield. So basically, you can do it one of two ways. You can do it this order and make the first card cost a lot, or you can do it in reverse order and make it cost less. So basically, if I made it cost 2 green and a green, I would put it on the front of the card, of the fuse card, because if you play that first and then play the 2 tokens, I mean, you're drawing cards, especially if you already have creatures out. But if you flip it the other way, you cast it first, and then no matter what, you're going to draw at least 2 cards because you already have the 2 spirits out. So it's kind of, yeah. Or no, you're going to, because, yeah. You know what I mean? See, that's why these fuse cards are confusing. Because if you swap them, that can really, really change how much the other card should cost on the card. Because you can cast them both. And essentially what it does is when you cast them with a fuse, it doesn't cast them at the same time. It casts the first one and then the second one. So that's kind of important. But yeah, I would do a fuse card with this because they kind of already made one like that. It's called Beck and Call. Let me just read it for you. Beck and Call.
You'll see what I'm saying here in just like 2 seconds. So Beck costs a green and a blue, and it says whenever a creature enters the battlefield this turn, you may draw a card. Okay? And then Call costs 4, a white, and a blue, and says put 4/1/1 white bird creature tokens with flying onto the battlefield. So like I said, it's literally like the exact same thing, but in different order. But you see, if you put Call on the front of that, like the bird creation, if you put that on Beck instead of Call, so if you put that on the front of the card, that probably would not cost 4, a white, and a blue. It would probably cost less. And then Beck would cost... Well, no, because it's not the same idea. But you see what I'm saying? Because if Beck, instead of saying whenever a creature enters battlefield this turn, you may draw a card, if it instead says all your creatures get this ability, then, yeah, it would cost a lot more if it was on the front. So, I don't know. It's confusing, but it's the same basic idea between the two cards. So, that's why I kind of find it funny. But I'm spending a lot of time on this. Let's see here. I have responses that are much less complicated than mine. I got one from @ZebGora on Twitter. It says, had to think outside the box with this one. I may have broken the box, actually. And, whoa. Yeah. Maybe. It's called Primordial Procession. Costs 3, a green and a white. It's a tribal enchantment, spirit. So, tribal enchantment being, you know, a lot of cards say, like, whenever you cast an elf card, you get +1/+1, or whenever, if you cast an elf card, untap all other elves or something like that. This is the same basic idea, but instead it's enchantment, you know, an enchantment. So say you had a card that said, whenever you cast a spirit, do blah blah blah. Well, usually it's a creature, but in this case it'd be an enchantment, cause, yeah, it would still count, cause it's still a spirit. That's the subtype. It's a rare. And it says, when you cast Primordial Procession, put 2/1/1 white spirit creature tokens with flying onto the battlefield. Ugh, okay. And it says, at the beginning of your upkeep, put a 1/1 white spirit creature token with flying on the battlefield, and then you may draw X cards where X is half the number of spirits you control. Buh. Wow. That's funny. Yeah, that's a good one. I mean, for 5 mana, that's extremely good. Because no matter what, first turn, the next turn that it's out, you're drawing one card, and then the next turn you're drawing two, and again you're drawing two again, and then yeah, this is like a really good Howling Mind, except it only affects you. Sweet. Well, thanks for the response. I think I had one other. Let's see here. It's in my email. Yeah, I got a response from a first time responder here. It goes by Bink. okay, and let's see here. All right, so here's the card. Said they liked the mashup, so they figured they'd send a response. It's called Double Deal. Cost 3 white-black hybrid, so 3 converted. It's a sorcery, and it says, okay, you gain 1 life and discard a card for every white used to cast Double Deal. You lose 1 life and draw a card for every black used to cast Double Deal. Both black and white mana must be used to cast a spell. Well, yes, that's true. That last part, I don't know if that has to be on there because... Well, oh, okay, no, I get it now. So you have to do both. So this wouldn't really be splashable in a mono, it would have to be in a white-black deck. So no matter what, you lose a life, draw a card, and you gain a life, and discard a card. But if you pay an additional black, you can draw another card, which you would probably want to do. It makes me kind of think, because I'm like, well, when would you want to discard 2 cards, but you might... just to draw 1 card, you know, if you are right on the brink and you know your opponent's going to combo off or something, you play this, discard 2 of your junk cards in your hand and draw 1 card and gain 2 life. No matter what though, you're either losing 1 life or gaining a life every time you cast this. You would never gain 2 life. You would always gain 1 or lose 1. Huh. That's what, see? I accidentally started thinking. Cool. Well, thank you again for the response. And there was an entire email behind that mashup, too. Mentioned, basically, a couple of things. I don't know how much of it I want to go over, but thank you for the response. I hope you keep listening. Sorry I haven't been having as many episodes out as I want to, but this is a very, very, very busy time of the year for me, and as I've mentioned, I don't have a lot of free time, and some of the free time I've been using has been for playing Minecraft.
So yeah, there's that. But thank you again for the response. Like I said in my email, I will probably go over that deck at some point. So, let's see here. So yeah, that's the mashup. I think I just had the two responses this week. But thank you for the responses. Hope you enjoyed those cards, because you're about to get two new ones. Alrighty, so let's go to the Gatherer and let's do this bad boy. That sounded gross. Okay, so I hit random. What did we get? Whoa, we got an old one. This card was printed in Alpha, Beta, Unlimited, and Revised. So it's a golden oldie, and I'm going to read the printed text first. It's called Veteran Bodyguard. Veteran Bodyguard costs 3 and 2 white. Okay. I'm just writing it down. Veteran Bodyguard. Okay. And it says Summon Bodyguard. I assume it's a human, but I'm not going to look yet until I read it. It's a 2/5.
So big fatty. And it says, unless Bodyguard is tapped, any damage done to you by unblocked creatures is done instead to Bodyguard. Okay. You may not take this damage yourself, though you can prevent it if possible, okay? So I think what they're talking about there for prevention is like Circle of Protections, because those were like the only way to prevent damage then. That and maybe a couple of, maybe like one other, but at the beginning of the game, there weren't as many options for that, so that's why a lot of cards back then were very specific, because there was only like 4 cards that would actually interact with this card. Not the case anymore. Okay. And then the Oracle, the Oracle text, it is a human, and it says, as long as Veteran Bodyguard is untapped, all damage that would be dealt to you by unblocked creatures is dealt to Veteran Bodyguard instead. Okay, so it actually didn't change too much, but it got rid of the redundancy there. All right. Veteran Bodyguard. All right, well, this could get interesting. I mean, it's not a very I assumed when I saw the really old-looking mana symbols that it was going to be a very complicated and interesting card to have to do, but it's actually not terrible. It's still interesting, but... All right, so next card. Oh. Well, this is stupid. Okay, so the next card that came up was Azorius Charm. Yes. This card is from Return to Ravnica Block. It's an uncommon. It costs a white and a blue. It's an instant that says, choose one. Creatures you control gain lifelink until end turn. Or draw a card. Or put target attacking or blocking creature on top of its owner's library. Ugh. So, interesting. So we got a Swiss Army Knife, and we got a dude that takes damage. Well, figure it out. So you've got Azorius Charm and Veteran Bodyguard. Those are the two cards we have this week for our mashup for episode 18. Good luck on those. So go ahead and send me a response to at oopsalldex on Twitter, or you can go oopsalldex@gmail.com. Those are the two ways that you can get a hold of me, two best ways to get a hold of me. For some reason, my email wasn't linked to my phone for like a week there. I had another Gmail linked, so I wasn't seeing any emails that I was getting. And then I logged in the other day and go, oh, hello, I have email. So send it to that now that it's actually linked to my phone. And I will send you a response back at some point. And then, if you send me a mashup response, or if you just wanted to talk about the show, that's cool. But if you send me a mashup response, I will for sure read it off on the show. And also a response to the question of the week, which I think is what we should now move on to. Last week, the question of the week was Johnny, Timmy, or Spike? In short, Johnny is a person who likes to win, but, wants to do it in a fun way, with a combo or with an unknown card or with a weird deck that everybody kind of goes, wow, that was interesting. They want to win, but they're not going to go crazy to do it. They want to do something fun. If they lose while trying to do something fun, that's okay. Timmy is a person who
likes to just play big cards. So this is the person that has a ramp deck that ramps up to Emrakul instead of cheating it out. Or this is the person that just has an Emrakul deck, just in general. Timmy is the person who likes to just play big cards because they're fun to play. They enjoy the cards that make big splashes. They don't want to be playing, you know, little 1/1 creatures that slowly ping you to death and then the game ends and it's just like, okay. You want to do something big and splashy to win. And then Spike is a person who doesn't care how they win. They don't care at all. All they want to do is win. So then they net deck or they play the deck that everybody's playing, or they go, okay, what's the best way to win? I'm going to play this deck because this is the best way to win. What deck are you playing? What deck are you playing? Oh, I'm playing a red burn deck. Oh, okay, well, I'm going to play a life gain deck. Ha 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 ha. You know, like that. So that's Johnny, Timmy, and Spike. All legitimate ways to play the game in different avenues of the game. I myself am more of a Johnny, I guess. I mean, I don't suppose you could tell by the podcast that I decided to create that I am a Johnny. I mean, I like to win. I like to play decks that are competitive, but I don't enjoy playing net decks as much as I do enjoy playing, you know, ones that I made that, you know, maybe they don't work the greatest, but when they do work, it's awesome. Like my awesome 40 billion Drake deck where I create infinite Drakes with Talrand and Archaeomancer, Ghostly Flicker, and Gilded Lotus. You know, that's the one of the funner decks that I made. It never, like, ever worked. I had it in standard for a short time. I actually kept it standard. I played it at an FNM once, and I actually ended up winning with the combo on the first game of the round. I lost the next two games, but holy crap, was that one of the most memorable, sweetest victories I ever had. Imagine playing in standard and having freaking being murdered by 40 billion Drakes. Yeah, can't happen very often. Anyways, so that's kind of why I think I'm more of a Johnny than anything else, because I like those decks more than I like, say, my... I mean, I like them, but I don't play them as often. Like my Affinity deck, you know, my Modern Affinity, and my Modern Mono Red Burn. I love those, both those decks, and I won't ever pull them apart unless I am completely poor and I need money for food, but I won't ever pull them apart unless absolutely need be, because I like to have them. If I want to play in Modern, a lot of FNMs are doing Modern now. If I ever move somewhere where I'm actually in range of a card shop that I can actually go to, yeah, I want to have some competitive decks that I can play, because I want to win also. But I didn't net deck those. Those decks are completely by my own creation. You know, I look online to get ideas, but I don't just go, this is the best deck in Affinity right now. I'm going to print that off and create it. No, I use the cards that I have to create the best deck with what I can make with my card pool. I have only bought maybe one card for either of those decks, and it was a second Tezzeret. So, yeah. Yeah, I'd say I'm a Johnny. And I think I only had one response on this question, and it was from @ZebGura, and he said, Johnny, I mostly play multiplayer and have to say winning is not my top priority. I do like to make an impact, though. So, you know, same basic idea, you know. Like to play, you know, if you don't win, not a huge deal. But you like to win, because when you do, you do it in style. My thought is, you know, if I'm playing a multiplayer game and I lose, if I'm, like, second person out, you know, dang. But, you know, at least my deck did something cool, hopefully, unless I got mana screwed. Now I can get up, I can go and get another beer. So, yeah, that is my response to question of the week, and thank you for your response to the question of the week. And I suppose you probably want to know what my question of the week is for this week. All right, so this week's question of the week is what I think to be an interesting one, and this is purely non-financial. The question is, if you could choose between any of the Power 9 or any of the, you know, extremely expensive cards, the ones that are hard to find, to frame and to have in your house just to display, not to play, just to display a graded copy,
what would you choose? What piece of Magic history would you choose? Would it be something from not that long ago, or would it be something from Alpha? Would it be just, I mean, you name it, and you could have it, what would it be? So to simplify, if you could frame any one Magic the Gathering card in your home, just to have, not to play, just to display proudly, to own a piece of Magic the Gathering's history, what would it be? So go ahead and send, if you have a response to that, to me, either at oopsalldex@gmail.com or at oopsalldex on Twitter. So if you've got a response to that, go ahead and
send that
to one of those two spots. But otherwise, I think that's basically going to do it here for me. So thank you. Thank you for listening. Thanks for listening to episode 18 of Oops All Decks. Sorry again for the couple week hiatus there, but you know, it's the holidays. I've got a tight schedule. So basically I'm just going to come out with these as I can, you know, if I can get weekly, I would love it, but sometimes that's not going to be able to happen. So, but if you have any questions or responses or anything that you wanted to say, go ahead and send an email to me or hit me up on Twitter. But otherwise, have a good day, evening, morning, whatever, breakfast, enjoy your lunch, and wherever you're at, drive safe.